This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 102, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe and the Netflix. And it's just not hot.
No.
It's not hot.
It's cold.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 102.
I'm not going to get used to the 100 aspect.
No, it's weird.
Yeah. I know. It's
now that we're on the other end and it doesn't mean anything, it's weird. Three digits.
When's the next time it matters?
Never.
Never, never really. It never really did it? I am Josh. I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And
Ola.
Connor.
His new name is Ola.
Connor.
Yes. iFanboy.com is our website where we talk about comics because we like them very much. Every week we will all read a big stack of comics, and one of us is tasked with picking the best one and writing a review about it. This week there was a little mix-up, but we got it up in time. And Ron had the pick.
There was a mix-up?
You well, thought you didn't
you
have
forgot
the pick?
You had the pick.
No, I didn't forget. I thought it was your pick. That's
well,
all.
That's the same as forgetting.
Yeah, well, luckily we caught it at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so
there
it was like
almost no pick in a world where no
pick.
One knows what
no,
the best comic book is.
I got thrown off. I was looking at too many calendars.
Fireman.
So
it looks at fireman calendars all day.
There you go. So it was my pick, and it was an interesting week. It wasn't. I wouldn't say it was a big week, or I wouldn't say it was a small week. I wouldn't say it was a good week. I wouldn't say it was a bad week. It was just a week. I thought there was, you know, there was enough mix of stuff where I did have some options going into the pick of the week, but ultimately, Green Arrow, Black Canary, number one. Kind of ran away with it by the time I got to
the stack. I think clearly it was the best one.
Oh, no, I struggled a little, and we'll talk about some of the other books this week. I did struggle a little. I thought some other ones came close, but Green Arrow, Black Canary tipped it over the edge, and I'll tell you why. If you remember earlier in our previous podcasts, the Green Arrow, Black Canary wedding special,
right.
The ending, the big cliffhanger ending.
You hated it.
I didn't hate it. It soured me. It really.
We brought you around. I thought.
Well, no.
What did I tell you on the show?
This is what happened. For those people who, so you can play along at home. And spoilers alert, blah blah. If you haven't read the Green Arrow Black Canary wedding special, go get it. You know, so you can see what we're talking about. But it ended after the wedding, and it ended with Green Arrow trying to kill Black Canary, looking like he's possessed, and Black Canary stabbing him in the neck with an arrow, thus looking like he was dead.
Right.
And I thought it was a great issue up to that point. I loved it. I know this isn't a review of that issue, but that ending really kind of soured me because I'm like, oh, what a cheap stunt, stupid ploy, blah blah blah. Way to ruin a great comic with some good funness. And then while we were doing in this very room, in fact, while we were doing this podcast, Connor said, "What did you say?"
I said, "You know, this is the standard twist in
superhero comic twist."
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, "You know, you're right." And I didn't.
You can't not do anything.
I didn't hate as much. No, you could have. Part of me just wants the nice little story. And, oh, they're married.
Of course you do. That's where conflict and drama come from.
Well, then that's the point. And what I was so impressed about this is that we've often talked about both when we talk about TV and TV shows and in comics as well. When there's a couple, it's not interesting when they get together anymore. It's the thrill of the chase. It's, you know, like the tension. The moment Superman and Lois got married, or Clark and Lois got married, it's just
Pam and Jim just hanging out, having fun together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or for me, when Cyclops and Jean Grey finally got married, I loved that issue. It was a fantastic exhale. Yay, they're married. And it was the next boring 8 years or 5 years that you've ever saw until Grant Morrison killed her, bastard. I thought it was really interesting that now, given that challenge, now that the chase is over, 30, 40 years of Green Arrow and Black Canary chasing each other, they're finally together, and how do you start their joint series together other than by ripping them apart?
Right.
Which I thought was a genius move on Winnick, and I got to give him credit. I've been very hard on him in the past, but I thought this was a great approach to that problem. So this issue opens up beautifully with a flashback to the old JLA when before Green Arrow had the goatee, when he had the green
right,
and red
outfit. Like the year one JLA.
Yeah, the year one JLA.
Yeah, years, yeah.
And it's you see the beginning of their flirting, kind of their playfully fighting kind of relationship. And I thought that was a great way to start this series. And then what we find out is it's a month after the wedding, and Ollie's dead body is laying in state in their basement, kind of like a superhero Lenin.
Yeah.
And Black Canary is out working the streets with Green Arrow. You know what I meant?
She's re-choice of words.
Fighting crime on the streets
with
Connor Hawk, who is then Green Arrow. And she's
in denial.
She's in denial. She's got a lot of anger.
So he's in a cryogenic chamber like in the garage?
Yes.
Yeah. Like in
a motorcycle
and a
punching
garage,
bag?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And in Star
garage,
City.
There's a door.
Yeah, okay, so that's the garage.
That's weird.
She doesn't accept the fact. She doesn't believe that it's Ollie. She believes that it's not him. And there's actually a great there's a great two-page spread of as she's clutching the cryogenic coffin or whatever it is, the see-through coffin. You see all the little snippets of the conversations that she's had with the different DCU superheroes. You know, some saying they're sorry, some giving advice, some and it was a nice really quick way to get the kind of pulse of how everybody's feeling about
this. And it recalls the wedding special because they're the same two-page spread where the reaction to the wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that Jim Gordon?
No, no, that's Ollie's old mercenary buddy.
All right, yeah. All right. Because I was like, Jim Gordon has a mullet.
No, no, he's Ollie's old mercenary buddy.
And so it finally ends with, you know, Hal Jordan saying, you know, listen, we, you know,
snap out of it.
You know, I want, you know, like, I want him back more than anybody. I brought him back last time he died, which I thought was funny because they're acknowledging, like, they keep saying it was hard enough the first time he died. Like, they're acknowledging the multiple deaths in the superhero thing. And ultimately, it leads to their conversation is being eavesdropped on by Bruce Wayne,
Batman,
and Batman says, you know, he believes her, and him and Dr. Midnight do a complete autopsy. They tear his body apart, and they find
Josh
is shocked right now. He's looking through the book for the first time.
So they're in the Batcave, and who's it? I think it's Dr. Midnight is warning her that you might not want to be here for this, and she's like, I've seen it a lot, and they've got Batman turning on a big bone chainsaw, and she goes, you know, I think I'll go sit by the cars. And you see them working. They tear apart his body. You see him holding his brain. You see, like, it's really kind of graphic.
Batman is not a doctor.
He's trained.
As far as I know. Yeah. Well, I mean, Dr. Midnight, he's a doctor. It's right there.
He's
in the
also
name.
Blind.
So wait a minute. Do you have to call him Dr. Batman?
Well, we don't know if he has a degree.
He's not board certified.
If he had an office, would that be on the door, like etched in glass, Dr. Batman?
But so ultimately they find on his thigh, they find one cell or one group of cells that are still actually alive. And it forces the body to change into something called Everyman. And I don't know who Everyman is.
I'm not really well versed, but
it looks like a shapeshifter.
He's a shapeshifter.
Yeah. And so ultimately now the chase is on to find out where Ollie is. And it ends with finding out that he is being held captive by the Amazons at Themyscira.
Yep.
By Athena.
But wait a minute. So it's been tied into other events and stories?
Yes, it's been. I guess it's been tied into Amazon attacks.
It must. So the question now becomes: how long has he been there?
How long was Elektra? I mean, how long was Ollie not?
Was the proposal genuine? Was it him? Yeah. Was it Everyman? We don't know. We're going to have to find out.
So what Winnick has done is that
he shook the whole thing up.
He shook everything up, and I thought that was awesome.
Everyman, the mayor. Something happened one year later.
Yeah, exactly. How far back does this?
I don't think he's been gone that long.
Yeah, neither do I. I think he might have been. It might have been post engagement. That's my guess.
I wonder if you were to go back and read Winnick's run, if you could find hints. I bet there must be.
Yeah, there has to be.
If it was an Amazon attacks thing, then it must. Then it's probably post engagement. The engagement was genuine. Then after that, he was taken.
Yeah. So who knows? We'll find out. But I thought it was really interesting. But like I said, there are other books that I thought were really, really good.
Wait, wasn't he not interested in strippers?
Oh,
that's very un-Ollie like.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Remember that? How the strippers and Ollie said, "I don't want strippers."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's very un-Ollie like.
Yeah, we should have realized that earlier.
Perhaps every man is gay, or just very sexually restricted.
So I thought Winnick's approach to the story and where he's taking this title is one of my favorite characters. I thought it was really well done. But what put this book over the top for me was Cliff Chang's art, or Chang, or I don't know how to pronounce the last name. Chang, I'll say.
Yeah.
His art, and it's funny because it comes off the heels of somebody recommended the trade paperback of Dr. 13, which is a miniseries that Brian Azzarello wrote. I think it was multiple issues, and that was a press. I don't know what the background is. Because I was looking on where.
It's a thick one shot.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at Chang's art on splashpageart.com, and it was at issue one, issue two, issue three, but they seemed to only be like 12 pages.
It was short.
Yeah, but anyway, which is really good. Go check out Dr. 13. But and in that I was like, this art is great. And then getting this, I didn't know he was on this book.
Right.
And I found out like last week, and that's when the excitement started brewing about it. And I loved his art in this book. I thought it was really, 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 really good.
I haven't seen his work before. He uses a very heavy line.
Yeah.
And that's not even a bad, but like, like
I mentioned in the review on iFanboy.com, it could be passed off as like kind of like a Darwin cookie.
That was the first thing I thought when I saw it.
But I don't think that does it justice. I don't think it.
No, it's definitely a different style. Yeah,
it's in the middle, sort of the Darwin Cook side and the super realistic side. It's squarely, I think.
But what I think I like about it is that it's so. I mean, because comparing this to another book that came out this week, like New Avengers 35 with Lionel Yu, which I like that art, but that's very kind of a scratchy, heavy, you know, kind of messy art.
This is clean.
Clean lines, you know, modern, you know, kind of angles and all that. You know, I'm talking about furniture. But I don't know. I just totally
want to go with the stain resistant page.
I just thought not only did his figures and his you know, like the action, but also I thought his pacing and his storytelling and like that. Like I said, my favorite 2-page spread is the whole DC.
He does good. Spread. He does really good emotion. And
yeah, he does kind of a little, you know, good facial expressions, but not over, like no noses or more than just the little nostrils. But you get it. Like there's depth and like I don't know. I was just really, really impressed.
That's nice.
And he's quickly now. now become one of my favorite current artists.
And also, you learned an interesting tidbit about him earlier today.
I did. I've been reading Transmetropolitan, finally, and he was the assistant editor on that book.
Like, and that's how 90s. You break in.
Yeah. So
you get to know people.
Yeah. And I love the cover. You see how the cover is like this textured kind of thing? I don't know how they did that or what he did, but it had like this kind of like 30s, 40s WPA kind of, you know, poster style. You know, I like that. So, yeah, I loved it.
It was a really great issue.
It sold me.
I didn't buy it.
You missed out,
you
my friend.
You know what? You I drew my line in the sand somewhere. I was not adding another new thing.
Yeah, you and that line in the sand, and it's still a good book, though.
I want good comics, but I won't read them.
It's like, I'm going to complain about comics, but when one comes out.
I can't read everything that's good. I just can't. There's no time.
So cull ones that are bad.
Do you think
you buy all good books?
For the most part, yeah. I don't really have anything. I've looked. I mean, and believe me, when I get to the point when I don't want to read something, I don't buy it.
Right, right. Well, a book that came very close in the running for the pick of the week for me was Booster Gold number 3.
Interesting.
But I didn't for a couple of reasons, but I wanted to hear what you guys said on Booster Gold 3.
I liked it. It was good. I thought it might have been the weakest one of the three. But the first two are really, really good, so that wasn't insane.
I didn't think it was the weakest one.
Yeah, I did. I don't know. Cause I think
I thought it was the cheapest one. Because I thought there was a lot of cheap gags in it.
Well, that would lead it to be weak. I mean, okay. The first two issues were really, really good. So this was just merely very good.
Yep.
You know, so it was a bit of a letdown in that sense. So that probably colored things. I mean, it was weird to see Jonah Hex in this scenario, especially drawn by Dan Jurgens.
It was funny because I think one of the reasons why it resonated in this is because I'm also reading Jonah Hex, the trades that you gave me, Connor. Right. So I'm like, this has like been hitting me on multiple levels.
So basically the plot of like Booster Gold is someone's traveling through time as Supernova trying to kill the Justice League, but back in time. So somebody takes out the doctor that delivers Jonathan Kent's grandfather.
Which is really smart.
So he's not there to deliver the grandfather. The grandfather will die in childbirth because it's the Old West. And Superman will therefore Jonathan Kent will never be there to get Superman.
Right.
And who knows what will happen to him then.
It's this ripple of events.
So Booster Gold goes back in time to stop that and ends up running into Jonah Hex. And
drinking
with Jonah Hex and getting into a bar fight and, you know, going to save. I like the fact that he had to go save the day while he was wasted on whiskey from drinking with Jonah Hex. It was good. I mean, it was good. I thought it didn't stand out to me because it wasn't as good as the previous issue.
I really enjoyed it though. I had a lot of fun reading it. But I felt as if there was a couple of amusing Back to the Future jokes in the book.
Right.
And
that was the first thing I thought when you were describing
it. Right. But then there was like a couple more and I was this book felt way self-aware of itself.
Yeah.
But it ended.
Ended with
on a great page. It ended with the time sphere. Smashing into Barry and Wally on the time treadmill.
Well, it's funny because Booster Gold's driving the time sphere and he's drunk.
Right.
And he's like, well, what am I going to do? Hit something?
Right.
And then they hit Barry and Wally on the time treadmill because they also go through the time with that thing.
Which is hysterical. The other thing I just remembered was not only were there Back to the Future jokes, but then they discover there's somebody else in a time sphere that's
Quantum
changing.
Leap.
Leaper. Yeah, exactly. I was like the evil Leaper from Quantum Leap. I was like, damn it. You know, like I really, you know, like I know everything's derivative, but this seems really derivative, you know.
But it's still a lot of fun.
Yes, this is a lot of fun.
Did you find that the Jonah Hex characterization was good?
It was okay. I mean,
it was okay. I mean,
he's not in a lot of it. He basically shoots a guy down in the street, which is pretty Jonah Hex, and then he goes to a bar, gets drunk. The only thing I thought was a little strange
and out of character
was that he's like, this may be the whiskey talking, but I like you, kid. I don't got a lot of people I call friends, which is not really Jonah Hex.
Yeah, but it's comic booky. I mean,
But other than that, I mean, I got past that. It was fine.
I didn't get that page, though.
The Beetle.
There was one random page that flashed back to Infinite Crisis.
Right.
It was right after Jonah Hex told Booster Gold that I call you friend.
And then you flash back to Infinite Crisis and see Beetle, and it's only one page, and it's really.
And what happened was is that it starts off with Beetle saying to Booster Gold, "I thought they're in the Batcave." It was when the Blue Beetle became the Blue Beetle in Infinite Crisis, and Batman's there, and he said, "I thought we're going to see your friend." That was the only link I could see was that the word "friend" in it, you know. Right. Like, but I assume it's going to be a you know.
Yeah, I just thought this had
it felt out of place.
It was a weird issue. It was good, but it was weird, so I wouldn't have picked that.
Yeah.
Josh.
Did you buy any comics, Josh?
I bought a couple. You want me to talk about them?
Sure, go for one. Pick one out of the stack randomly.
I'm on the fence about New Avengers 35. And I don't mean it was bad. I just don't know. Like, it's funny because you read comments and reviews about it since it's come out. Half the people are like, this was great. And half the people are like, what the hell was this? And
I really liked it.
I think I did.
Before we even get into it, my problem with it, though, was the cover didn't reflect this story. Yeah. I'm sorry.
All right. We know. The cover didn't reflect the story. I've read that.
Is that like some sort of verbal cue you can just say? Rutabaga, and we know you're talking about the cover.
Okay, so let's just push that right out of the way right now because we've had that argument.
Well, the reason why is the cover, because when we left last time was the New Avengers were watching a bunch of symbiotes attack the Mighty Avengers.
Right.
And so this cover is like a melding of a symbiote with Wolverine, so it looks like Venom Wolverine.
And this was a story point that excited a lot of people at the end of the last issue. I was like, oh, I don't want to
exactly,
do that.
But then when we open up this issue – are the New Avengers even in this issue?
Yeah, they are.
They're barely in it.
In the background somewhere.
They're right here.
But there's no story with them.
No, that's the Mighty Avengers.
Oh, well, it's the same thing.
Yeah, but anyway. But the whole story is focused on the Hood and his criminal organization that he's put together, which, like I said, I really, really
like. I like that part. I just don't know one single thing about the Hood or who he is. So.
And I would say that you can pick up the recently re-released hardcover of the Hood miniseries that Brian K. Vaughan did, but I've heard it's not very good. So.
I'm thinking that's kind of the point, though, is that you've never heard of him. Yeah. And I mean, I'm guessing that when he starts showing up, other people are going to be like, who is that? Like, and you don't know. So I think what he's doing is he's taking this character, and this almost feels like the result of a drunken bet or something. Like, but they were like, yeah, make the Hood into something. I will do it. You know, like he just was like, I'm going to make the Hood into the Kingpin.
I liked the idea that he's bringing the villains together. We talked about the fact that it's been a while since the villains have –
have
been around.
Yeah.
The only other thing that sort of bothered me was you take out the Hood and put in Deathstroke the Terminator, and they're doing this in DC already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in, you know, putting together the team.
But then again, Bendis probably wrote this like 7 years ago.
Right. So,
you know, he's probably done with
it. But I mean,
but other than that, I thought it was really good. I like the idea of the villains sort of unionizing.
And what was great, the idea of the villains unionizing, but the idea also is that as a Marvel fan, like, there are a lot of villains that we don't see. Like the villains that were kind of the C-list have kind of fallen off by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And you see they're reemerging and going to do something interesting with them. Like, for example, it starts off with Jigsaw trying to pull a heist and getting embarrassed by Tigra.
Right.
And so the way the Hood gets Jigsaw to join his crime syndicate is by he fucks up Tigra pretty hardcore.
That was for a scene in an Avengers comic book, I was like, that is pretty brutal.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, they're not unionizing. They're performing a crime family, basically.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. Yeah. You kick up the money and all that kind of stuff. But
that was a little bit like, it's just the mafia. It shouldn't be new.
Yeah. But the thing is that these typical kind of C-list villains in the Marvel Universe are known just to be stupid or just known to make dumb mistakes. And the Hood calls them out on that. He's like, what's the point of that? Like, look, if you have a problem, come talk to me. We'll solve it. You know, and they keep the money going, keep it as a business.
And
of course,
since they're bad criminals, this will fall apart. You know, it's
it could fall apart or it could be genius.
Like, as they're flawed characters, I assume that the undoing of them all will be that one of them will get too greedy. Or something. This is what always happens in crime families: they start whacking each other.
Right.
And the part I really liked about this was the deathlock. Like, they've all got this thing, and the scene of them using the deathlock and doing it was almost an afterthought.
Yeah.
It was just like one page, or the deathlock kicks ass. They got wrecked in the process, but they just have a table piled with money.
And what's so funny is that they the New Avengers think that a deathlock is coming to kill Tony Stark.
Right.
Like, that's what Wolverine came back with. They've got a deathlock. They're going to use it on him. So, like, what I thought was funny was the big plot device just got – it got used. Like, they're like, we lost them.
Well, you know, he's making the Hood not an idiot. Like, he's like, well, what if we make one of the criminals an actual smart person, as if there would be in the real world? Because criminals are not stupid. You know, like a guy who's the head of a crime boss or, you know,
crime family.
Boss of a crime family, probably pretty smart dude.
And I got to say, I just love the cast of villains. As in Greg Gargoyle was there. I got to call that out. That was awesome to see him.
Who's the not Red Skull guy?
I don't know.
Did you see what I'm talking about?
Were you able to recognize most of these people?
I was able to vaguely. The thing is that I got to pull out my handbook to the Marvel Universe.
I was able to vaguely. Which isn't a problem.
Recognize some of them. Like, I recognize the dude with the spikes that looks like a lion. I don't know his name. You know,
I think it's funny that like these kind of scenes where they're all together and they're chatting.
Yeah.
Like, that seems to me like Bendis' favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm Curtis Carr, Camestro. Oh yeah, we know you. Yeah,
just put three people in a room and just see what happens. You know, So I mean, I thought it was a really good issue, and I liked the Hood stuff. It's just that It just felt awkwardly placed in terms of the storytelling.
I think this is one of those issues that feels weird if you're waiting a month, month and a half in between issues. If you were reading, I mean, I don't want to say if you're reading in trades, but no, it's not even it. But like as a part of a story, like it makes perfect sense. It's a chapter in a story.
Yeah, I mean, do we really need to see the slugfest in detail, or do we need to see the setup for what's going to happen later? More importantly.
Depends on what kind of fan you are, kind
right.
of.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I totally enjoyed it. But I would have liked maybe – well, and the thing is it ended with it brought us back into the timeline. And I understand the nonlinear storytelling. So that's fine. I mean, that's – you know. It was good, though. I enjoyed it.
The one issue for me that would have been the close pick of the week was Green Lantern.
And why was that?
24. This – it's just – I mean, I think – has this been late?
Like, no, it's been pretty. So. It's pretty been pretty on
– Are we sure about that?
I'm not sure about that.
I don't think it's true, but
I don't feel as if it's been. I don't late. Feel if as it as has late. Been. It's only been by a week or so.
Well, it's been so much fun that I don't really care that I'm not. You know, it's happening so fast that it's hard to keep track of what's going on.
I don't think it's late.
I think it has been.
All right, well,
but it's not important. I just was curious because I just having a hard time following the overall plot in terms of.
Well, are you buying the other issues? I mean,
I did, but they're not.
You
important.
Don't need to.
They're
yeah,
not
you don't
important.
Need to.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, no. Well, that's why I think it's interesting because we're on part eight. This is, I think, the fourth one of this. I don't feel lost at all.
Right. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's like I don't know the plan. You know, I don't know what the villains are doing, particularly attacking Earth. But I don't. You know, beyond.
Well, I don't think we knew either until this issue. Well, I mean, when they explained it, when
bad guys
Kyle
attack Earth.
Yeah, I mean that's.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like it's such a good time that the intricacies of what they're doing is not that important. I think this is like the most rocking summer action movie comic book that's ever been.
This is the sleeper hit of the year, if you ask me.
I just think it might be going a slightly bit too long.
Well, here was my problem with it was that I mean the big you know climax of it was basically Hal gets sucked in by Parallax again, and then him and Kyle break free of Parallax, and it's a big victory.
But we already knew.
And it ends with all the you know Hal, Kyle, John Stewart, and Guy all you know
charged kind of, back
you
up.
Know doing the Green Lantern. I've seen this like three times in the past 4 years.
That's a Green Lantern thing. That's what the Green Lanterns
no,
do.
No, but the thing is
say,
that,
that's,
like
– the Avengers say Avengers Assemble. I mean, the Green Lanterns
power
up.
No, I'm not talking about them. I'm not talking about them doing the Oath. I've seen them come back against – I feel like I've – this kind of – the Green Lanterns regrouping and like getting all – like the, it's the – this should be the rally point moment that I normally love. And I read it and I said, oh, again. You know?
Well, that's what happens. That's I mean, what it's do. Like at the end of World War Hulk and he's staring down the barrel of whoever's coming at him. Yeah. And that's what I said. I was like, oh, that – You know, like, oh, he's going to fight tanks.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. I felt energized. But then I had that, like, pang of, like, oh, this feels just like the end of Rebirth or just like the end, you know.
Well, that's a Green Lantern story. But the thing is, I think within this story, we've seen this kind of thing a lot.
Yeah.
Where they're almost beaten and they don't get beaten.
Yep.
And in this particular storyline, I think it needs to move quicker.
Yep.
It'd be nice if they actually were beaten for just a little bit. Like, one of the things was when they took Kyle into Parallax, I thought for just a second that Kyle was like, I was like, Kyle's kind of expendable.
Yeah.
If they wanted to get rid of him, they could. Yeah. And if they hadn't screwed up the timing and had Kyle show up in the other books like that, I think there was a bit of a, is he going to make it? Like, you know, I think there would have been a little more suspense on this.
I don't think they were going to get rid of Kyle.
Well, basically, it ultimately gave us the worst Kyle Rayner costume ever. So,
which
I hate his costume now. It's so bad.
It's just a Green Lantern costume.
No, it's bad. It's a mix of John Stewart's and his old one, and it's just bad.
I just think they need to get going and get to the end of this. I mean, I'm having a good time, but I think it's a little bit too, there's some filler in here that doesn't need to be.
Yeah,
probably.
But it's approved by the Comics Code.
Well, there you go.
I haven't noticed that in years.
I don't know. Did you guys notice that the Transformers will be coming out in DVD? I don't know if you saw any ads in your comics.
I didn't.
But it's going to be
– it's going to be big.
And every time I see one of these ads, I think, God, I wish that – for a second, I'm like, maybe it was good. And I'm like, no. Yeah. I wish it was for some reason.
Yeah. So real quickly, I wanted to bring back up Black Summer, published by Avatar, Warren Ellis and – Juan Jose Reap on pencils.
Still on this, are you?
Still kept going with it. My store got it. My store is a little store. They don't really take a lot of risks with ordering. I didn't special order. I think I got two copies in. But I just thought it was really interesting because this one started off with a bang. It's a world with superheroes, some sort of you know superpowered beings who have gone into retirement, and one of them comes back and kills the president. And that's how it kind of starts. And what's happened is the third issue. In the second issue, the heroes kind of regather, or I assume heroes, the superpowered beings kind of regather and kind of regroup, and they start dealing with the mess that one of their own has caused. And we're seeing it through the eyes of one character, This guy, John Noir, who's got kind of dark hair and all kind of thing. He's missing a leg. And
does he smoke?
Yeah, he smokes.
Because he's noir.
And in this issue, the tech guy gives him a prosthetic leg, and he gets his costume back, and you see it's kind of like, okay, cool, now this shit's going to happen. And then Ellis kills him.
You know what? What's funny is that as you're describing, I go, I bet he killed him.
Yeah, oh, he totally killed him. I thought it was great. Like, basically what happened was that the authorities find where they're hiding, and this guy who's been a reluctant kind of guy puts his costume on, goes out, and goes to surrender to the authorities. Instead of actually taking a surrender, they just explode him.
Now, did the whole issue send as a setup to that point?
Somewhat.
Did you feel kind of like you wasted your time?
No. I just thought it was just like
because I feel like I would have seen that coming in a Warren Ellis.
Oh book. No, I didn't see. Well, no, I didn't. I didn't see it coming at all. So that's why I felt kind of. I was like, oh man, I thought it was, you know, it was the build up and then the tear down kind of thing. But what made me think was it feels like this is the book that Thunderbolt should be. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to make direct kind of connections. But it's a superhero-y, but it's got that kind of anti-government kind of feel, and it's got that violence and that realism, the kind of thing where it almost, you know, is like Ellis doing that, but without, you know, restriction.
Thunderbolts is a book that kind of dropped off the map, huh?
Yeah,
I mean, no one even talks about it.
Yeah, no, they didn't talk about good or bad. Nothing. Yeah, no, it does not get mentioned whatsoever.
But ultimately, this was good. I've enjoyed these three issues so far.
Is that Avatar?
Yeah, published by Avatar.
Is that the standard Avatar art?
Well, I don't know about the standard.
Almost all the Avatar books look exactly the same.
Okay. Well, then I don't know. You tell me.
Somewhat.
Okay. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. So, a little better than normal.
Yeah, I didn't like the ending was kind of vague. Like, I didn't know whether it was the ending, like the last page, because there was like six pages of of internal ads. But you know, like this is the last panel.
On Avatar,
that could have just been this last panel could have been. The third, the last page.
Yeah, you know? That happens in Avatar books. It also happens. I mean, doesn't Image do stuff like that too?
Sometimes
they fill the bunch back there.
Oh no, they've been pretty good about not getting it into the story. But yeah,
yeah. So. Runaways 28.
Also, don't hear much about this book anymore.
Yeah, that was one of the things I want to talk about.
I think they're a little too spaced out. I think it's a little bit of the Astonishing X-Men thing.
Well, no, but the thing is that like Whedon's writing it, and I don't want to say it's not good. But I don't think it's as great as I thought it would be. I think I kind of put it a little higher up on a pedestal. And the delays in it coming out, I really think have worked against it.
Well, you know? I mean, it's one thing is I think that he's got the voices down really well right off. I don't sort of feel a disconnect. But it feels – I mean, everybody fell in love with Runaways as Brian K. Vaughan's book.
Yep.
And it's not quite that, which I think affects it. And also what you did is he went and he took them out of continuity – not out of continuity, but like out of their world and
yeah. –
And it's sort of another story, and it feels like a mini series, like that wouldn't be part of the main series, a series of it, like if this
for
was like
when you said mini series, I thought of like North and South.
No, like
a TV mini series.
No, like an aside, like if this was 1, 2, 3, and 4,
yeah,
but not 28, 29.
This is like a wacky adventure in time.
Yeah,
yeah, I guess.
And those, you know, or like an annual or something like that. I do feel like it's been too long.
Yeah, I agree. But I gotta say, it ends with the time traveling parents from the runaway. I forget whose parents. Gert's parents, which I thought was great. Which I thought I did enjoy the ending. I got excited as I read it.
It's really well done. I don't want to even make it seem like that. It's really dense. If you look through it, like there's just tons going on. It's almost too dense. A little. Because he's got all these characters in this world that I don't feel.
Well, I mean, look at the first page. The recap is really dense.
What's cool though is that you get to see because of the time traveling and because of the what are they called? The whole their parents.
The pride.
The pride. Sort of anything can still happen. I don't know if you've noticed, but
that's
the pride,
what I realized.
The pride keep coming back.
Yeah, that's
they
what
were
I realized.
Killed early on, which is good.
But remember the head of the pride came a earlier version of himself came back from the 80s.
Yep.
And now we've got Gert's parents are obviously before they died, but they don't know that the kids are aware of it. And this is the first issue where I really felt the time that's elapsed since the first series because the kids felt older.
Yeah.
You know, because what happened was that the Gert's parents came up on Chase, who was kind of a screw up and kind of thing. And they're like, he's like, well, what, you know. And he kind of said, "What you know? I loved your daughter, and she's dead." And like it made me realize the time that's elapsed since this book has been around. So it was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, I just don't think it's as good as I thought it would be.
Don't hear the buzz on it like you used
exactly,
to.
Exactly.
Which is weird.
Yeah. It's also right in the middle of the story, and like.
Yeah. I know, but every time a Runaways came out, people you know you could feel excitement people had for it, and you don't really.
Yeah.
That's what the delays will do to you.
Exactly.
Kill your buzz.
You.
Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man 24, talk about delays.
One more day continues.
Wasn't this supposed to be a weekly?
It was supposed to. I remember it being supposed to be a weekly. It would go from Amazing to Friendly Neighborhood to the other Spider titles, and every week we'd get one. And I don't remember the last.
This was like 3 months ago?
No, it was like maybe a month and a half maybe. Or
more than a month. Yeah. Like way more than a month. But yeah. Part two of One More Day.
Part two of four. It was originally supposed to be six, if you remember, by the way.
I think it was only four. It was supposed to be a month. I thought it was a gap between.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm wrong there. Okay.
This felt to me, story-wise, more of the same.
Yep.
But what wasn't the same was that I thought Quesada's art was like 10 times better than the last part.
What's funny is that I hadn't looked at the one before it, and I just went to flip through this, and I was like, oh,
yeah, no,
that's right.
He was rusty in the first one. I know we said that in the story. He's really, really quite much better in this one.
Right.
And this guy can put panels, like they're just big dynamic panels with those like sort of.
There's a great two-page spread of Spider-Man swinging through the city, and he's like, he's got all this McFarlane like webbing, and it's really, really good-looking book. I just want them to get this over with because I feel like I didn't read Amazing Spider-Man leading up to this, but I feel like from what I've heard and what this is, basically we've been treading water now for like 6 months.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. Like it needs to get moving. And it ends with it seems like the catalyst has now been introduced.
Right.
And it seems like a very Layla Miller kind of X-Factor kind of random catalyst that you didn't expect in this little redheaded girl.
There's always what's creepy about little girls always – they always make them the like the demon or the monster.
It's always the fire starter thing. But again, we get treated to the worst design cover in the world.
See, I love these covers.
Oh, they're awful.
I picked this one over the
I picked this one over the variant, too.
It's just kind of rude to say still only
$3.99. Yeah, the $3.99. And what the $3.99 gets us this time around is bonus material in the bio of Mary Jane.
Bio.
And then we get a old story from – back in the day.
I think I actually have that one.
I gotta tell you, if I'm trying to pound through my books on a Wednesday night, now granted, this is not what everybody does. When I hit a block of text like this,
it just hits, it's like a wall.
You're like, oh.
There's no need to read that, though.
They reprinted Amazing Spider-Man 259, which kind of helps for the story, not really. But what I thought was interesting, though, was that there was some kind of director's cut, almost like kind of bonus art materials, which brings to the forefront that Quesada's using Google SketchUp to do a lot of the backgrounds on this. And what he's doing is he's you know kind of digitally rendering the locations and then drawing over that. And I think that was a really interesting kind of take. And I wonder how much that's influenced the delay. And you know, because you think it would help speed it up, but if you look at how you know intricate the Doctor Strange's sanctum is, like that's spending some time on the computer, you know. So so I thought it was really interesting that you know again progressive in that they're embracing it and showing the process. But then there's the ethical like, well, is that art or isn't it art? You know, because
I'm looking at these pages, it's art.
No, I agree. I'm raising the question. That's
you know what's funny is that there's I think two
I get
things...
paid to raise questions.
You get paid?
What?
Oh, listen.
I think two things when I look at the Quesada art, and one is that. It's really nice, and you get to see how dynamic it is, and this is like how to make a page exciting. You remember how to draw comics the Marvel way?
Yep.
It's a really good example of that, where like you'll be close up on like a lower part of the page or something like that. And the other thing I think is, it looks a little dated, just a little bit. Do you feel? I feel like
early 2000s.
Yeah, I do feel like that, which is kind of odd, and I don't know, just because I haven't seen him draw in a while, but people don't like. Things have skewed towards a more
realistic.
Either that or an animated style. It's either like John Cassaday or Darwin Cook, and like this kind of hyper detailed stuff is. I was like, wow, I haven't seen this in a while.
The reason it stood out for me is I hadn't seen the spider webs like that in forever. Yeah. The McFarlane style. Every little webbing is drawn.
The early 90s status quo.
That was cool,
though. He became the status quo. it was interesting. I mean, I don't think the story JMS is. You know, he's. You know,
well, in 6 weeks, we'll get part three.
And, hope. And hopefully by next year, this will all be wrapped up.
Dude, where did he find time to pencil it anyway? I mean,
So anyway, so if you haven't checked out any of the One More Day titles yet, you can go to Jim Hanley's Universe if you're in the New York metro area, because Jim Hanley's Universe is one of the best and most progressive comic book stores around. They got a great selection of comic titles and T-shirts and action figures and all that fun stuff. They got all the comics you need from mainstream to manga to minis, miniseries, a lot of great independent comics at Hanley's. So go to Jim Hanley's Universe where art and literature meet. They have two locations. One is across the street from the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan on 33rd Street. and the other one is at 325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island. So when you're in the store and you're buying something, tell them iFanboy sent you. And you can go to their website at jhuniverse.com, or you can go to their MySpace page at myspace.com/JimHanley'sUniverse. And they've got a really cool event coming up, don't they? On the – what was the date of that? The 21st, I think, the 24-hour comic book.
The Saturday night.
Yeah, the 20th to the 21st. They're going to be they're gonna be hosting a 24-hour comic book creation
with
Scott McCloud.
Scott McCloud, and I believe it's his brainchild.
Yeah, he's been a big proponent of
the 24-hour comic. Right, and Stephen Bissette, artist on Swamp Thing.
Yep.
Dude's got skills.
If you're in the New York area, go check it out. Watch the people creating comics, and maybe, you know, if you got 24 hours, make your own comic.
It's 3 a.m. and you drunkenly stumble in. They're like, Scott McCloud, are you making comics? Because I understand them.
Email time.
Made you spit.
First email's from David from Bloomington, Indiana, who says, Silver Age comics and all they represent have come up a bit in the podcast over the past couple of months, and it seems that some of the iFanboys, especially Connor, are vehemently against Silver Age elements in modern age books. While this is all well and good, what about Silver Age elements in Silver Age books? Have you guys read books from the 50s and 60s? Which ones have you liked or disliked, and why? Though I love modern comics, I was brought into the comic fold by my uncle who grew up in Silver Age and made me love old school Superman, Jimmy Olsen, and the world's finest.
We love the Silver Age.
Yep. I believe in the rant I had against this, I said Silver Age books style needs to stay in the Silver Age books because that's
– You want to read Silver Age now.
That's but I enjoy reading the old books, but the style needs to stay there.
Yep. I've read a lot of the old Flashes in Silver Age. Mm-hmm. I've read a lot of the old Justice Leagues. I read my dad's comics when I found them in high school. In a box that he wouldn't acknowledge existed. I was like, are these your comics? He's like, give them to me. I was like, oh my God. I was like, ew.
Did you look under the comics?
What? Yeah. But anyway, so
hubba.
And of course, I talked, you know, a couple months ago. I got the Fantastic Four on the bus, and I love the old Marvel Silver Age stuff. I ate that up with this.
No, thing. I have tons of it. I have boxes and boxes of the old Silver Age Justice League and Batman and World's Finest Comics, Brave and Bold. Yeah. You know, I have old Flash's stuff, and on the Marvel side, I've got all the Silver Age Invaders books and. Yeah. I love all that stuff.
That's Golden Age, isn't it?
No, they didn't. They weren't not the 40s. They revisited the Invaders in Silver Age.
Oh, they did.
Yeah,
I think I'd know that.
And I have some of the Golden. I have the reprints of the Golden Age stuff. Like, and that's not Silver Age, clearly. But I love reading that. I mean, I can enjoy them for that time period.
Silver Age rules.
Josh doesn't like them.
Not really.
Yeah,
that loser.
No, it's not. It's one of those things like
it's why it's why you can't watch Citizen Kane and all the same.
No, I can. Yeah. No, that's earlier. I can totally now. You know what? It's like I know they're great, and I've tried to read them. I can see things that are great about them, but I don't enjoy them as much, and I don't know why that is. I feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah.
But also maybe it has to do with when you started reading comics and how you started reading them. I don't know.
I mean, I started basically reading. I would buy new ones, but I'd also buy back issues.
Well, no, like I'd started reading in the modern age, and then I went back and kind of like, because I like history, and I like, you know, same reason why I loved, you know, like the 1919 White Sox and like that whole story and all that kind of stuff. You know, like it represents a time period.
I can really appreciate the art from the time period.
Yeah.
If nothing, and I would say I didn't used to be able to do that, but now like if I look at a Kirby page, I can see like, oh, that's.
But even the storytelling is. I mean, yes, it's a little hokey and it could be a little campy at times and stuff like that.
The thing that I have a hard time getting over.
Right. Yeah. So I guess it's just that. So.
When I was a kid, I would go to the store and I'd buy. Like
Silver Age back
in
issues
the 80s, but I'd buy like the new issue G.I. Joe or whatever. But then I'd also buy. My dad would buy me one back issue, and I'd buy an old Batman every time. And it was like, you could buy 10 new ones for this one back. But it's an old one.
Right, yeah, I used to
and
say
now I wish I had bought the 10 new ones because now they'd be old.
I do think there's something about like 70s Marvel comics, which sort of is in between the two.
Right. That's the beginning of the modern age.
Those are when you get into like those Avengers soap operas that I thought
were
the greatest.
Also the psychedelic
thing.
Wacky
Doctor
stories.
Strange, trippy stuff, So, love the Silver Age. Okay. Okay, so Mark writes in, and he says that he just listened to the podcast, and he wanted to suggest to Zach and the other poor college students, and this is referencing last week's episode where Zach from Portland called in complaining he can't afford comics.
Yeah, this
was an outcry, polarizing issue. So so Mark writes in saying that suggesting that Zach should check out his local library. He's a librarian in the Portland Beaverton area and at the Cedar Mill Community Library and a regular listener to the show. He tries to keep their library collection stocked with current titles as well as older classics. He takes our recommendation seriously and just added Scalp to the collection. Wow, thank you. He thought it was a good example. He thought it was a great book, but really sad. They have a adult, young adult, and juvenile collection, and he knows the main Portland Library and Multnomah County Library System has many more books than they have in his library. So do some searching at your local library or check their catalogs online. You won't find single issues, but if you wait for the trade, it's worth it. So
it's good.
It's fantastic advice. My mother's a librarian, and probably on a monthly basis, I help her order books and tell her what you know what they should have in their collection. And
you need to get that they have comics in her library.
Yeah, yeah.
You should get now. Your next goal is to get her to put. Are they all in one comic section?
There's a bit of a debate about that. They're spread out. There's some in the young adult section. They've snuck them into the collection by putting them in the art section, which I hate.
No, they need to be put in the fiction or the nonfiction or the adventure.
That's
or
my goal. I said they should be in the fiction section. They're just their stories.
I just like that we got a question from somebody in Oregon, and then somebody else nearby was like, "No, my library is a good place to go." That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. So Zach, go find Mark. He works at the Cedar Mill Community Library. Go.
You should both wear your iFanboy T-shirts, and that way you'll know, and you'll do the thing like you.
Yes.
All right.
Next question. Zachary Piazza of Manhattan.
Is that Mike Piazza's nephew?
I don't know. I don't think so.
He's also a student, and he's low on money at the moment, and he's taking care he's taking 18 units of chemistry. I almost remember what that means. and he's got no time to work, big capital N-O. Clearly thinks this means he doesn't have any money, and so he can't have comics. So he skips meals sometimes to pick up books here and there. And the question to us is, how do we feel about selling back issues you have that are valuable and loved? And he asks, he has a collection of all the Marvel Zombies first prints. Do you know why we're laughing? Okay, so he's got the Marvel Zombies first prints from 2 years ago. And I'm really close to parting with them for some extra cash to pick up new books. And would I be crazy to do such a thing? Have I ever gotten rid of comics you love for dough and felt separation anxiety? Do you want to just give me $15 a week comics allowance so I don't have to worry about this anymore? Seriously, he wants money. It's just turned into a begging thing.
No.
Okay, so
I actually looked this up when we got this email, and I looked on eBay for Marvel Zombies, and they were going for like $2 an issue.
Okay, here's the deal. If you have a comic from the last 5 to 10 years and somebody's willing to offer you money for it, but you can go buy the trade, sell that thing.
Yes. Now, but here's the thing is that collecting and selling comics is some fundamental thing to understand that if you have a comic that's worth $10, you will be lucky if you get more than $5 for it.
Okay, but like the other thing is the reason to hang on to it is, do you love the thing? Do you have a sentimental attachment to it? Yeah. Yes or no? But that comic may be worth $10 now or you get $5 for it. 15 years is not going to be worth squat.
Right, true.
Because the Marvel Zombies craze is going
to
be over.
But the point I was going to make was that going back to the Silver Age question, when I was in high school, I needed money and I grabbed one of my dad's old showcases with the Flash and I sold it for $300 to buy an amplifier for a band that I was working with.
It wasn't even your amplifier? You weren't even playing guitar?
No, but I was putting out the record and all this stuff. I mean, it was this whole kind of group thing. And so it murdered me. I mean, it killed it. To this day, I regret it. You know,
does
I mean,
he know you did that?
No, he doesn't know.
Still?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Oh, my God.
But it worked out for Kevin Smith.
Right.
But he wasn't buying comics for the week.
Yeah, it worked out for – I mean, yeah, Kevin Smith sold his collection to fund Clerks, which is, you know, the one of those
stories. I think he's got a way – if he sells all of his Marvel Zombies, he's going to get enough money to buy one, maybe 2 weeks worth of comics. Is that going to be
worth it? Is it worth it?
For you? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know how I feel about selling the back issues. I would – probably sell ones I had already trades for.
If somebody came along and they offered me $500 for my Ultimate Spider-Mans and I could get the trades, you know, for what, like $100 or something, I'd do it in a second.
Absolutely not.
Well, you have a little.
Well, no, I have over 30 long boxes and I love them.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. There have been times in my life where I've mulled, you know, I could sell this collection. I could do something, you know, like I could do, you know.
You really?
Yeah, well,
pennies on a dollar.
The thing is, I'm at the point where I go to somebody like Mile High Comics, I'm selling a collection and they buy it by the pound.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that kind of situation. Yeah, exactly. And I could get the money for it, but it becomes fleeting. And like the thing is that I love my collection. And for me, I've got more of a sentimental connection than someone like you. Like you don't have a sentimental connection. Like you could replace it with the trade and be fine. Where me, I open up that bag and I open up that issue and I'm thrust back to the day I bought that book, and I remember it, the smell. Like I was flipping through some of my old X-Men back issues, like in like the 200s, whatever. And I remember when I bought every one of those issues. I know exactly. Like it's just
took photos.
It means so much to me. And so like you know, if I was younger or more naive, I could probably convince myself I could sell it. But now I'm stuck with it. So yeah, it's a tough call. So
sell it.
Don't whatever.
Sell it for pizza, you know, whatever. Although I've sold stuff that I regretted. I sold baseball cards Like, yeah. I remember I sold like a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card,
the upper deck one,
for like $20 because I was like, 20, what do I care? And then like 3 years later, it was like 100. Now it's worth like nothing, but still.
Yeah, I wish I'd bought the Billy Ripken card. Fuckface.
All right. Ivy from Boston, Massachusetts writes and says, I have a rather odd question. Would you know if Bendis,
quote unquote,
is an actual or pen name? It's also the name of a Thracian lunar goddess whose worship involved orgiastic rituals. And she gave us a link to that thing.
What is orgiastic?
There were orgies.
Having to do with orgies.
You have orgies to honor the god.
We don't know exactly.
Well, I do know this. I used to work at a TV show that Brian Bendis came on as a guest way back in 2000. And he signed the release form, Brian Michael Bendis. So
yeah,
clearly that's...
It's his name.
That's his name. Yeah. We should send him this.
He bro. Might also be a Thracian lunar god.
He might.
Goddess.
Goddess.
Possibly. I'm not denying he is, or I'm not confirming.
I can tell you what he'd say if you asked him this.
What?
I've listened to I don't know how many hours. He'd say, what? That's what he'd say.
Exactly. What? What time is it?
I'm pretty sure that's his name. He signed up legally.
I'm hip. I'm cool.
If he did, then...
Well, Ivy, that's some good digging, so that's pretty good.
So probably not so much. But if you have any other theories and you want to send us an email, we are at contact@ifanboy.com, which is not an alias either.
That's our real name.
That's the actual email address.
Netflix has over 75,000 movie titles, and they've got no late fees. You go on the website, you make a list of the movies you want, they send them to you. Free shipping both ways. You keep them as long as you want. Fast delivery. Plans start as low as $4.99 a month, and if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you get a two-week free trial. It's awesome.
Woot.
Woot.
All right.
2 weeks.
Voicemail. So we mentioned that Zach from Portland's email or voicemail last week was kicked off a whole bunch of feedback. Here's one voicemail we got related to that.
Hey, guys. This is Corey from Cleveland. I was listening to last week's podcast, and Zach from Portland was talking about being in college and buying comics. And I just wanted to add to that a little and kind of had a question. I'm also in college, and I have a job like you guys suggested, but I think it's just gotten to the point that comics are just so expensive that you can't go to your comic store on a weekly basis and pick up more than a couple books, and you're not going to spend more than $20-some dollars. I mean, I go back to my comic store at home, and I buy four things. I'm already at $15, if you think about it. If it's $3 a piece plus tax, and you're buying four or five of them, I think it's just gotten kind of ridiculous. So my question is, what do you guys think about the price of comics these days? I know it wasn't not 10 years ago that they were still at about $1.99, and now they're already up to $2.99, $3.50, almost $4. So just wondering what you guys thought of it. Love the podcast. Talk to you guys later.
They weren't that much less expensive when we were in college. They were like,
I started buying them right as I got out of college, and their $3 was the issue point.
Let's keep in mind that you're talking to. I mean, Josh, you fall on this too as well. Like, when we started buying comics, they were 75 cents and a buck.
Yeah,
and I remember freaking out when they went up to 125. I mean, I remember freaking out.
No, I was a hardcore collector when they were $75 for a long
right,
time.
Yeah,
I freaked out when they went to 125.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, when they went to 125, I freaked out. Like, I was
that
pissed.
That was around the time when I was reading when I was a kid. They were in that price point. Yeah.
And then they slowly went up. When we were in college, they were maybe like $2. I remember the highest would be like a $2.99. Would be like
when I stopped reading them as a kid, they like 150, like the Punisher War Journal. That was like
deluxe comics for 150.
Yeah, and that was – I never saw them go higher than that until I came back, which would have been like 99.
Right.
And they were $3. The scary part is that it's 8-9 years later now, and they haven't gone up.
Well, it's called inflation.
It's a combination of inflation, and also if you look at a comic 20 years ago, they're much better now. Like the production has gone up. So I think there's been a combination of inflation plus also paper prices have been ridiculously going up.
But even if the production wasn't high, it would still be more expensive than it was 10 years ago. That's just the way things work.
How much was a movie 10 years ago?
Milk cost a lot more
10
years ago than
gas? Fucking gas? That's what I'm more pissed off about.
No,
don't get me started
on
the fucking gas.
It's okay.
When I got my license, it was under a dollar a gallon.
All right.
It was 98 cents.
Oh, God. Cut him off.
You know, if you go by the gallon, water's more expensive than gas.
Get a hybrid
bottle of water.
Well, yeah, because it's fancy.
But I also hate all of you for still being in college.
You know what's scary?
So suck it up. Just buy your comics if you have.
You know what it means? You got to be more discerning.
Yeah, exactly.
I buy way more books now than I did when I was in college.
That's a good point. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Because I have a job and pays more money than the $100 a month I got.
Why
from
do
the
I feel more
hall.
Broke now than I did then, though?
Well, because we were in school in Ithaca where things cost a dollar.
Yeah, I guess.
But
they're going to be $4 soon.
So But anyway, yeah, but to end this whole thing, we heard from Zach. He got a gig. He made some money. He bought some books. Yep. So all's well in Zach's world.
He was buying hardcovers. He got a good gig.
Yeah. See, that's insane. I don't think I bought trades in college because who's got the extra money for trades in college?
Rich kids. I mean, rich kids.
No, I didn't think trades were as big though then. You know what I mean? I bought them every now and then to catch up on
things. I bought
the
Kingdom Come trade. Remember, that's the day you blew me off in the
car. I bought Kingdom Come in issues.
I bought the Kingdom Come trade. No, but I had them, but I know. That was the day it came out, you son of a bitch.
No, but the thing is, like, it's a lot – the trade market has grown since we were in college, so huge.
Sure. It's true. Trades are actually used to be more expensive too.
Yeah.
Like per issue, like a book was like $20 at least.
But I didn't – in college, I didn't buy any Marvel books.
Yep.
I bought maybe one or two.
That's crazy.
I bought very little, you know.
Did you start buying them when Marvel Knights started?
Yes. Joe Quesada era.
All righty.
All right, so now we're going to pause the show for Secret Confessions for my fanboy.
Hey, guys. This is Ryan from Houston. I just called to say – sorry, I'm a little nervous. I really like the Punisher movie. There. I said it. It feels good. I know y'all hated it, but I really liked it. Wow. It feels better than I thought it would. You know what? While I'm at it, I really like Fantastic Four 1 and 2. Damn. I did. I'll see 3 if they make them in the movie theater. Thanks, guys. This feels really good. This feels almost as good as the day I decided not to buy any more Ultimate.
Okay.
I don't believe
Let's clarify. I've never seen the Punisher movie.
Are you guys ready for this?
I like it.
I have seen it.
Okay.
And I didn't think it was that awful.
No, it was fun.
It wasn't a good movie.
No, it was fun, though.
But it wasn't like, oh, God, that
was
awful.
It's in my Netflix queue, but I haven't
John Travolta was pretty awful.
Yeah, but he's the overtop villain. That's just...
Yeah, but
Thomas Jane was great. I thought it was a Punisher.
You know what? Yeah, there was parts of it that were actually pretty good. It wasn't that... I mean, I wouldn't...
But we've never actually talked about it, so I don't know why you get the impression that we...
It's true. I think you're just projecting on us. You think we don't like it.
And I liked it. I like both Fantastic Four movies.
Well, that's you.
Well, no, I liked them too. You know, they were fun.
I saw the first one on DVD, and I thought, that wasn't that horrible. I don't ever want to see it again, and I didn't want to see the second one.
The second one is not as bad as the first one.
Well,
so you might think it's less not horrible.
Yeah, but there's still probably something better.
You should see it for the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
I think.
I could just watch it on the YouTube.
It's not the same.
Or that.
Also, they got Dr. Doom better in the second one.
Okay, so...
Also, Pimbleton's in it.
Okay, so Jeff from Texas?
Take it away.
What?
Not so easy, is it?
Hey, this is Jeff from Texas. I noticed Scalped was a pick last week, or this week, I don't know, whatever. If you guys like Scalped and you want more stuff from the American Indian sort of perspective, Sherman Alexie's books are awesome, especially The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven. It's a collection of short stories. It's badass. Also, my question. I've noticed a lot of... A lot of TV and movie properties are getting second chances or maybe third and fourth chances in comics, like Angel's getting a wrap-up for the series, Buffy's in Season 8, Army of Darkness has been kicking ass for a while, there's a new Terminator series coming out. What properties would you want to see continued in comics? And if so, if you have one, what team or artist or writer would you like to see on those, and where would you like them to be published? Thanks.
Okay, I don't have an answer to his question.
You know what? He had one too many questions. Maybe two.
But I will say that I liked Buffy, and when announced, I was a huge Angel fan. And when they announced Angel, I was initially excited, but the more I thought about it, that show had one of the most perfect endings of any show I've ever seen. A lot of TV shows blow the last episode, but this was perfect.
Yeah.
And I have no desire to read anymore. I loved that show, and I don't want any more of it.
Right.
No
okay.
More.
Fair enough.
Perfect ending.
Okay, that's fair. But are there any other? I mean, because the concept of continuing things in comics is interesting because you no longer have a budget. You don't have to worry about cast.
Buffy? Isn't that the exception rather than the rule?
Well, who knows? I mean, if they let's say Donald P. Belisario allows a Quantum Leap comic, and it's good.
Well, if it's good, it's
written by Brian K. Vaughan, and it's
Brian K. Vaughan can't do everything.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I just threw something out there. I mean, you know, like you know, pick, you know.
Well,
you
I, th-
know.
I think it leads to an interesting chance that you can take with these stories that you no longer can tell on TV.
Go back to the same thing. You guys love Oz. Greg Rucka writing Oz.
Oz ended.
I'm just saying.
No, but I mean, it did. Yeah. Like
no,
it's
no,
one
I mean,
of the,
yeah.
It's just the
hypothetically,
same...
get away from the ending.
But there's lots
yeah,
of shows
yeah.
that didn't get to end.
Yeah,
well. So that's
Carnival.
A place they could...
Could you see? I could see Carnival go. I didn't really
people,
watch
people
it. People you know.
Would like that because it never did end. But
yeah.
I
Sports Night.
Yeah,
Sure, it's great. Give them a shot. I just think that the odds are probably they're not going to be good, and then the ones they are doing, I'm not interested
in. The thing that makes a TV show good is the way that it's done on TV in that medium. And the thing that makes a comic book, that's why like translations to me, everybody always like makes a translation up to be the holy grail of things, but like –
Well, no, but it doesn't – but I don't see it as translation. I mean, I see it as extension. I mean, because Buffy had comics before season 8. Buffy has been a presence in comics since the 90s.
Yeah.
So like there's always been – I remember buying a Willow comic that Terry Moore wrote in college. You know, like there's – you know, it's always had a connection there. It's another venue to tell the story. And if there's a universe – you know, the same way that Lois and Clark was a Superman but on TV. You know what I mean? Like it was a way – you know, but then again there's the quality aspect. If something's well done, like I use Quantum Leap as an example. There were Quantum Leap comics. Remember in we were looking through them? They were these awful painted covers of Dean Stockwell and stuff.
Yeah.
But Quantum Leap is a great concept that can live on in this – in a comics medium done well as well. You know, it's still just storytelling. Yes, true. But
so
we have Booster Gold.
We have no answer for you, basically.
Twin Peaks never really ended.
Now, would you read a Twin Peaks book?
Oh, this could go on forever.
If Mark Frost and David Lynch wrote it, I would.
Yeah, and imagine on art, Sienkiewicz on the art.
Let's do that one.
Yeah, there we go.
Where would you like it published?
Quebecor.
The comic book publishers.
All right, so if you have a question, you can call into the voicemail line at 1-888-326-2697.
But we have a special edition podcast.
Yes, we do. Last week we were we teased a little. We spoke to Jim McCann, who does marketing over at Marvel, and he agreed to answer your questions. So we went into the Marvel offices earlier this week with 9 pages of over 60 questions, and we sat for hours with Jim.
He did all of them.
He did all of them. He was a trooper. He was a podcasting trooper.
Yep.
And so if you want to hear that podcast, you can go just look in the feed. It's going to be released just under this show. It's not going to come up automatically. This show should come up automatically first. You have to go back to iTunes or whatever, and it's going to be directly under, kind of like how we do the movie podcasts.
Or if you want,
exactly like that.
Go to ifanboy.com, and you can directly download it from there.
Yeah. So it's going to be a long one. We're going to warn you, but it's got some gems in there. It's a lot of fun. So
it was fun.
Yeah, it was actually. It was good. And he, like I said, he was a trooper.
Yep.
So
we stuck it to him a couple times, and he rolled with it.
Yeah, he was awesome.
You can go to ifanboy.com for all the latest ramblings and thoughts we've got on comics, as well as the weekly pick of the week. And you can go read Ron's review of Green Arrow, Black Canary there at ifanboy.com.
Yeah. And every week, in addition to this audio show, we've got a video show that comes out on Saturdays. The one that came out.
We do?
We do. The one that came out this past Saturday was we were answering audience voicemails.
Yes.
Similar to what we just did earlier. And upcoming this week, Josh has been laboring over this opus.
Yes.
Yes, the show that the audience has been waiting for.
Anungan Rama.
All things Hellboy will be discussed this upcoming
Saturday. Here I was being all subtle, and then you just said it. What the heck?
So, Hellboy, coming up next Saturday.
I'm still giving him the stink eye. It threw him off. You hear that pause?
If you want an iFanboy t-shirt, you go to jinx.com/iFanboy. You can pick one up there. It says intern on the back, iFanboy on the front. You can join the intern nation. If you do pick one up, send in a t-shirt. Don't send a t-shirt. Send a picture of the t-shirt of yourself wearing it. That would be helpful also. Send it to jinx.com if you got a hot friend.
You can hire a model. I don't care.
Jinx.com. Send them there or send us the pictures. If you send the Jinx, you get free stickers.
Yeah.
You know the email. It's contact@ifanboy.com. And you know the voicemail. It's 888-FANBOYS, which is 888-326-2697. I assume you know what to do with those as well. Right. So we're not going to waste any more time on it.
And if you're sitting around on the internet and there's a bunch of things you want to do to waste your time, you can go to frapper.com/ifanboy. And you can see where people who listen to iFanboy live, and you could raise your hand and be counted there, as well as you can go to myspace.com/ifanboy, comicspace.com/ifanboy, verb.com/ifanboy, join the iFanboy group on Facebook by searching for iFanboy, and go to twitter.com/ifanboy to see all of our life.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of stuff on the web. In addition, go to ifanboy.com. So.
You could vote for the show at Podcast Alley, or you could write a review in iTunes for this show or the video show. And as we always like to say, and we really mean this, if you know anybody who think you would like it, just sit them down and play it for them. And if they don't laugh, we'll send them a nickel.
I can't follow up on
Once again, iFanboy does not guarantee the validity of these offers.
And if you like the show, you want to donate to the cause.
Donate a nickel.
Donate a nickel or anything you want. Go to
What? If everybody could just donate a nickel.
iFanboy.com/donations. Click on the donate box on the website.
And see how many people can send us a nickel. Can you do that?
What are you, I think we lose money in the deal using PayPal.
Do we? Yeah, probably. Okay.
Who was that TV host that asked for money?
Soupy Sales. Soupy told Sales. Kids to go into their parents' wallets and take these little green pieces
Soupy
of paper
Flanagan.
Out and mail them to the thing and get fired. So Flanagan, you're fired.
No. Okay, 7 cents. That'll cover the – that's a nickel plus the surcharge.
All right.
You have 7 cents.
Have we been worth Sally Struthers?
Have we been, have we been worth 7 cents to you? Connor's hungry.
I am hungry.
Let's hungry Connors have been all over the world for years.
I'm
you
Connor.
Can help.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
Bye.
7 cents.